Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hi, I'm Phineas Mir from the Boldness on 3CR, a disability and human rights radio show. The theme for the next hour of 3CR's broadcast for the International Day of People with Disabilities is giving a voice to young people with a disability. The next two features we've got for you have been prepared by young self-advocates seeking change in disability services and community attitudes, so their rights to participate in all aspects of life is recognised and supported. The right to access education, transport, housing and employment. The fundamental right to lead an independent adult life, not tied to parents or an institution. So the first feature presents the experiences of four young people with disabilities, Stuart, Jason, Ange and Michelle, along with themes of somewhere to live, someone to love and something to do.
I'm Di Winkler from the Summer Foundation. The Summer Foundation is a not-for-profit that aims to resolve the issue of young people in nursing homes. We use a range of strategies to influence human services policy. We empower young people in nursing homes and their families to be informed, make choices, and tell their stories. We're involved in research to provide an evidence base for policy change. We're working on creating a movement by collaborating with other disability organisations to engage the corporate sector and the general public in the issue of young people in nursing homes. And we're also working on integrated supported housing, so we want to increase the range and the number of supported accommodation options available to people with disabilities. Young people with disabilities living in nursing homes are one of the most marginalised groups of people in our society. 53% of young people in aged care receive a visit from a friend less than once per year, and 82% seldom or never visit their friends. They are effectively excluded from society, with 32% seldom or never participating in leisure activities in the community. People with disabilities are just like anyone else. They want somewhere to live, someone to love, and something to do. In Victoria, there are currently 200 people under 50 years of age living in a nursing home. The average age of people living in nursing homes is 83 years. Each year, 70 Victorians under 50 years of age are admitted to a nursing home. Young people in nursing homes have a range of disabilities, including acquired brain injury, multiple sclerosis, and Huntington's disease. Today we'll be hearing from Stuart, Jason, Angela, and Michelle, and they'll be talking about somewhere to live, someone to love, and something to do. First, Stuart and Jason speak to Paul Gianni about somewhere to live and why it's so important to them.
Hello, I'd like to welcome Stuart and Jason. We're here to have a conversation about lifestyle options and particularly where people would like to live. Stuart, would you like to tell us a little bit about your current living arrangements?
Yeah, I'm currently living in a rented accommodation and with a view to looking at buying a new place.
Okay, do you have family?
Yeah, I've got four children.
And Jason, where are you living?
I'm living in Williamstown, and I'm living in an accommodation unit for people with MS. There's two units. Each unit has five people.
Okay. And your family?
I've got two children, and I would love to have somewhere that that they can come and stay the night. The other thing that's really important to me is I'd like to own property, and at this point in time, I can't.
I think that one of the key driving forces for us actually moving is the fact that we want to assert our identity on our own living environment. And I think that's pretty important because I think that that's kind of a lot of what you, where you live can reflect who you are, and the same way your clothes can reflect who you are. And those, you know, the things, your music, any sort of like individuality. You can't have that in your own sort of like in a rented accommodation. And I also appreciate it from your perspective, Jason, where you can't put your kind of mark on where you live either.
No, because it's not my property, and it's also I share a unit with four other people, so I've got to take them into consideration.
Yeah, it's interesting the point that Stuart made, though. We have aspirations in terms of where we'd like to live and the environment. Stuart, for yourself, what is it, or where would you like to be?
When we think about sort of like home and what makes a home, the thing that I thought about, and this is coming from the perspective of, you know, like an immigrant as well, is the fact that home is where your family is. You know, it doesn't really matter where I live as long as I've got my children and my wife with me. And that also comes from having come 12,000 miles and moving. And so I can totally empathise with you wanting to be with your kids. To me, that's kind of your home.
They don't really want to come and visit me at the accommodation unit because it's not a nursing home, but it's a place where, you know, there's a lot of strangers walking around and the kids don't feel comfortable.
So there's no private living area or living room where you can have just your own guests and your own space?
No, I have my own room and have my own ensuite, but if they were to come, we would have to stay in my room.
Jason, can we unpack how you came to be living at Williamstown?
It was a marriage breakdown. I did have support at home and I had modified my house to live there, but in the end, the relationship between my ex-wife and I fell apart, and where we crossed the boundaries was, well, she started off being my wife, but she ended up being my carer.
Yeah, I think that can complicate any relationship dynamic, and it certainly happens a lot, I think, where family members become carers, unpaid carers.
That's right.
But clearly you love your children and miss them, and there's clearly a relationship there that you want to continue.
Absolutely, absolutely. I make an effort to bring my children each week. I see them where they want me to go. My son the other week wanted me to go home and see him, so it took me 3 trains and about 2 hours to get up to Upway, but I had fish and chips with my son, and then we went and bought a magazine, and he was happy that I was there. So.
But you weren't able to access the family home? It sounds like you had to be in public space.
That's right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really difficult.
What about you, Stuart? You obviously have a conventional nuclear family arrangement at home.
Yeah, it's certainly nuclear. There's 4 kids, so it's kind of...
Well, it sounds like the atom keeps splitting.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we have. I have 3 girls and a boy. My wife helps me with that, so yeah.
Yeah, so family dynamic is essential in terms of your living environment and how you actually organise your weekly life.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, we have a very traditional environment where I, you know, sort of like tend to work 9 to 5, and my wife actually stays at home and cares for the children and, you know, does everything associated with sort of like meeting their needs. And so, yeah, I mean, we are pretty traditional in that sense, I suppose.
Mm. Jason, what about the social dynamic in having to share a house? I know Stuart's sharing with his 4 children and wife, but you're sharing, I got the sense, with 3 other adults?
With 4 other adults.
4 other adults.
Yeah, and that's not easy. I mean, you have to sort of, you know, have to make sure that when I use the television, that out of politeness, I just ask, is there anybody else watching something? Or I have to make sure that my music's not too loud. It's often a case of when you get up, you sort of say good morning and you might say good night at the end of the evening.
But essentially you haven't chosen to live with each other. It's really by circumstance and need that has brought you 5 adults together.
Absolutely.
Mm. But we certainly have some awareness that there is the Summer Foundation and a program or an initiative called Building Better Lives. So with me is Di Winkler. And Di, you clearly have some insight into how the system could be better or different.
So I guess what I think about Jason's situation is that the disability support system has been set up with an assumption around people with congenital disabilities and that it's okay for people to live in a group situation, whereas particularly young people in nursing homes where people are just like the rest of us, and then something happens where they might have an acquired brain injury or that they might have MS or Huntington's disease. So they have the same expectations as the rest of us in terms of where they want to live. With a lot of the social housing that's being developed at the moment, if you could have one apartment where there was 24-hour care available, then Jason could live in a 2-bedroom apartment and have access to care when he needed it, but sort of have the sense of his own place, possibly like either rent that or purchase that, and then have his kids come and stay when he wanted to. And then I guess the other part of that is you might have a flexible sort of support system so that you might have some people who live quite close to the carer who need a lot of care, and then people who are living further away and they're more independent. And so that would create an environment where you could actually manage changing needs. I think group homes and congregate care have their place, but I think people with disabilities, there really needs to be a range and real choice, whereas at the moment Jason has really limited choice. If a place is offered to someone with disability in a congregate care or group home situation, there's a sense in which they should be grateful for that, whereas for Jason, really, it is a good place, but it's so far away from his family. It really doesn't meet his needs as a dad at all. And it's just not thought about in the disability sector.
Just in closing, I'd like to reflect on what does make a home for us. Jason, would you like to round up by giving us a sense of where you think you might end up? What would be your ideal living arrangements?
My ideal living arrangements would be living in an apartment in the city. That would be close to train lines. That would be also a place that has extra rooms so they can have my children come and visit me whenever.
Can you see that that could happen, that there could be a reality?
Well, if I have any chance to make a change, yes, it will happen.
Fantastic. I wish you every success with that.
Thanks, mate.
I'd also like to thank Stuart and Di Winkler for their insights and contribution. Thank you. You've been listening to Somewhere to Live, participants from Building Better Lives.
People with disabilities are just like anyone else. They want somewhere to live, someone to love, and something to do.
Ange was only 17 when her family was hit by the news she would probably spend the rest of her life in a nursing home. Ange was bashed almost to death by an ex-boyfriend. Louise is going to tell Ange's story on her behalf, as Ange's voice is still recovering.
Hi, my name is Angela Buck.
I am now 24, and when I think back to how my life used to be, my memories revolve around sport and my friends. I grew up in Benalla, and I was a very good athlete. I was a great high jumper. I played centre in games of netball, played squad basketball, footy and soccer. I used to sing with my friends. We were sure we had singing careers. I was a very happy, active, popular, enthusiastic teenager. I was just starting year 11. I focused on my studies and had been voted into the VCE leadership group. I also loved to indulge my creative side, in particular abstract art, lead light and woodwork. I was clearly focused on chasing my dreams, which included becoming a successful psychologist, marrying and having three boys. Despite the horrific injuries inflicted on me and all the medical teams believing I would not improve, with strength and determination, I have proved them wrong. I always try to keep moving forward. With the help of my family and friends, I've been able to keep soldiering on, though it hasn't been easy by any means. My family fought hard for me to receive rehab. The experts thought my injuries were too extensive for me to participate in my own rehabilitation. The option offered to my parents was to put me in a nursing home back in Benalla. My parents would not agree to this, and finally I was accepted into a rehab program in Melbourne. But I couldn't stay there for long, and I had to live in the adjacent nursing home to continue my rehab. My life changed dramatically after my injuries. Quite frankly, living in a nursing home was pure hell. No one my age. Friends didn't visit because it was so uninviting. It was boring, smelly, lonely, and depressing. Thankfully, I had one of my parents with me nearly every day. Waking up strong in the morning, walking in a straight line. Lately, I'm a desperate believer. Since the brain injury, I've become a completely different person in my eyes, for obvious reasons. I can't walk, talk or think as well as I once did. 7 years on, I'm still slowly moving forward. I can walk, though I prefer not to because it is so hard, painstaking and slow. Mentally, I have come a long way, although it is still apparent I have suffered a brain injury. I must not dwell on that. I keep moving forward and working towards my normal life. Well, as normal as possible given my injuries. Since being disabled, I've met some amazing people, seen some amazing sights, and even been able to complete a lifelong dream, travelling to America. So life didn't stop, as I thought it would. I'm still growing, learning, and hopefully becoming a better, wiser, more mature, worldly woman. To help me to achieve this, I want and need to move to Melbourne, so I can live the life I want and have always planned. Moving to Melbourne would enable me to work more extensively in my field and educate people to look beyond the disability and see person's ability, because a chair doesn't make you any less of a living human. I I feel there are more social, educational, recreational and employment opportunities in Melbourne. Also, there are more people and more opportunities to broaden your social network. I believe people here are much more open-minded and accepting. I would be able to really get back into my therapy, i.e. speech and physio, with my favourite people, Jan and Jeff, who are both experts in their field. I would hopefully gain an entertaining nightlife, where I hope I would be able to make some new and interesting friends among the fun and entertainment.
I also hope and believe I will inherit my chances of hopefully being able to grow as a person mentally and meet Mr. Right, someone to love.
People with disabilities are just like anyone else. They want somewhere to live, someone to love, and something to do.
Michelle Newland has never given up on her dream of becoming a primary school teacher, despite developing an acquired brain injury 3 days after her 19th birthday. She joins us on the International Day of People with a Disability to tell us her story, Something to Do.
Well, I'm 26 years of age, and I received my acquired brain injury from a severe asthma attack that I had 7 years ago, on the 14th of January 2002.
How was the prognosis explained to you and your family? What injuries did you sustain?
Prognosis was bad. My parents were told to expect that I would be in a vegetative state for the rest of my life, that even if I was to recover somewhat, that I would need 24-hour nursing care, and that I would never show signs of initiative, be able to express myself, and to be peg-fed. My injury is called a hypoxic brain injury, which means that my entire brain is affected.
Can you tell us about your life before your injury?
At the time, I was studying to become a primary school teacher. I had a lot of close friends, which I went out to the movies with, or we would have sleepovers, or just hang out together. I also worked part-time at a shopping kilo downs called Mercy $2. I had my license and my own little car. I visited my family often. I was also quite heavily involved in my local parish. You could say that I was quite an active 19-year-old.
So why were you pursuing teaching?
It was a lifelong interest of mine to become a teacher. I enjoyed my primary years very much and dreamed of one day, when qualified, to return to my primary school, Resurrection Primary School, in St Albans and teach there.
Michelle, I believe you attend your local primary school and help out in one of the prep classrooms. Can you tell us, what is your role there?
As you might know, prep classrooms can be a bit of a handful. I attend one class in particular once a week with the assistance of my companion, Amanda. We help the children with numeracy and literacy studies. We move from table to table and help any children that might need assistance. I love it. Hi there, it's Mrs. Riley in the preps in room 9.
Now, Creations by Shelley has been running for a few years. How's the card-making business going, and what's your role there, Michelle?
Yes, Creations by Shelley has been running since May 2007. I started making cards back then to help with my hands coordination and also to help maintain focus. Since then, things have snowballed and I've produced on average 2,500 cards per year, give or take a few. I don't make every card by myself. I have a team of wonderful helpers to assist me. Yeah, every design and final say is mine.
That is a lot of cards, Michelle, and it's great having a feeling of doing something for other people.
It is time consuming, but I thoroughly enjoy it. I love writing out a card for somebody that I've made. It feels so good.
Now, how do you view your progress, Michelle? And are you proud of your achievements?
Well, it hasn't happened overnight. By no means has it been easy, but I have come a long way. I've learned how to eat again, walk, talk. I can now shower and dress myself independently, so I'm very proud of myself, as and I have needed help with those things in the past. It feels good to finally do it by myself. I don't believe in the word plateau when it comes to recovery, as every day, no matter how big or small, I like to do my best and constantly set myself new goals. I stand by my motto of the sky is the limit. I truly believe that it is.
Now, that's a very good segue to the next question, which is the sky is the limit celebration. It's positive focus and why?
Firstly, the aim of the celebration is to give thanks to the many people, organisations, communities and of course my family for their continued support and love through my recovery. Even though I've come a long way, the journey is not over and we all need help in life, no matter what. I wish to launch my new goal for myself, that by 2012 I will be somewhat independent. But I can't get there alone. So we're gathering so I can thank everybody and also invite people to commit something towards my goal. Then we're going to celebrate with some food and some dancing. I can't wait to see everybody.
Put on your dancing shoes. Fantastic. Let's all boogaloo till we puke. Okay. Now, so Michelle, what would you say to someone that found themselves in a similar situation to yourself?
Okay, never give up. Think positively, set goals that are small but achievable, and make sure you give yourself a pat on the back every now and then. Don't always believe everything you get told. There is always hope, no matter what. Just have faith, at least in yourself, because you are a person first and you are important.
If you'd like to know more about Building Better Lives, you can go to www.buildingbetterlives.org.au or phone the Summer Foundation on 03 9894 7006.